Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. Now, it is July 6th, 2022, so let's give you a quick preview of the docket. First, we're going to talk about love triangles. Then we're going to talk about what is up with this punk in Highlands Park. And then a new definition for a body farm, and not the good kind. And then a case resolved that took place when I was in high school, and I remember the city was freaked out about it. Finally, some justice, and then finally today, our dumb criminal of the day. Let's talk about it. All right, aficionados, before we open the docket, let's please support the people that support Crime Talk. Take a look at this. Extra wallets are the most efficient small wallet in the world. Are you tired of losing your wallet? Well, extra wallets come with a solar-powered tracker. The tracker has a worldwide lost and found network. The solar battery charges in 3 hours and lasts up to 2 months. Here I have a wallet from the Parliament Classic Collection. It's made of environmentally certified premium leather, has an extra pocket for cash, and holds up to 12 credit cards. The solar-powered tracker fits right here. Extra has tons of styles in their wallets to choose from, ranging from wallets and card holders to bag and laptop cases. Go to shop.extra.com/crimetalk and you will get 20% off site-wide. I'll put the discount link in the video description so you can check out the wallets for yourself. Okay, let's get to the docket. Let's give an example of why love triangles can be deadly. Remember that Texas yoga teacher, Caitlin Armstrong? Well, she's been charged with first-degree murder of the professional cyclist, Anna Mariah, or Mo, Wilson. Now, Armstrong, who was arrested in Costa Rica on June 29th, was booked into the Travis County Jail in Austin, Texas, Tuesday after being transferred from the Harris County Jail in nearby Houston. Now, jail records show that Armstrong has been charged with unarmed first-degree felony and a Class B misdemeanor charge of theft of services equal to greater than $100 and less than $750 related to the May 11th shooting of Wilson, according to the records. Now, this Armstrong is being held on a $3.5 million bond, which obviously she has not been able to make. So after 43 days on the run, Armstrong was arrested by United States Marshals in a hostel in Costa Rica. Now, Armstrong had altered her appearance, dyeing her shoulder-length hair dark brown. She was also wearing a bandage on her nose. The area under her eyes was bruised from a reported surfing accident. There's been a report that she was in possession of a receipt for plastic surgery to alter her identity, obviously, further. Armstrong fled the United States last month with a fake passport, and a witness who watched Armstrong's arrest reported that Armstrong left behind a passport with her sister Christine's name on it. Now, authorities have alleged that Ms. Wilson briefly dated Armstrong's boyfriend, Colin Strickland, last fall while the couple was separated. Now, though Armstrong and Strickland, a professional cyclist, reconciled, he remained friendly with Wilson, and the two went swimming together before the shooting. Wilson was in Austin to compete in Gravel Locus, a 150-mile race through Texas, when she was found bleeding and unconscious from multiple gunshot wounds inside a residence in East Austin. So here's a couple of observations. First, love triangles can become deadly because someone will undoubtedly become jealous. Now, Caitlin Armstrong was obviously the jealous one. And why was she jealous of Anna Wilson? Well, Wilson and Colin Strickland dated when Armstrong and Strickland were separated. Sure, they apparently kept close, but that is the boyfriend's fault. That's Strickland, okay? But now we have a situation where Armstrong's life will probably be spent behind bars. Why? For this Colin Strickland, who agreed to see his old fling? Strickland should not have done this. Little dating advice. If you are broken up and you are with someone else, you don't go back and talk to your exes. All that is you're looking for a quick hookup whenever it's convenient. And if you're looking for a hookup, the relationship you are supposedly in is probably over and because you're out looking to be with somebody else. Bottom line. Now also, my hat is off to Costa Rica. Why? for speeding up the process for Strickland to be returned to the United States. Also, my hat is off to the country of Costa Rica. Why? For speeding up the process for Armstrong to be returned to the United States. The U.S. did not extradite her back to the United States. That could have taken months or years because Costa Rica would not have sent her back if she faced the death penalty, which is an option on a murder after deliberation case. What did Costa Rica do? They deported her for an illegal entry using false documents that she used to enter the country. Nice move, Costa Rica. Saved everybody a lot of time and energy. Miss Armstrong has retained two attorneys, a Richard Kofer and Naomi Howard. We wish them the best of luck in that case. We will discuss this case in more detail tonight on our live broadcast, which we do every Tuesday night. But since I was traveling yesterday, we're going to do it tonight, Wednesday night at 6 p.m. Mountain Time. Please join us. I think it's going to be interesting. And we may have a guest. Pretty sure we're going to have a guest. It's going to be good. All right. Next, what is up with this punk in Illinois? That's right. This Robbie Bobby Cremo the Third. Yeah, well, he apparently was staring blankly ahead as he appeared virtually from the Lake County Jail for his initial court appearance on seven counts of first-degree murder. The attorney that his family had hired had to withdraw because they found out that there was some sort of ethical conflict that they learned of late last night. Therefore, he went forward today without an attorney, and the public defender was appointed to him. So we'll see if the public defender continues on or whether another private attorney will in fact enter on the case. Bond was not argued, as basically Mr. Cremo has no money to post bond at this time. Now, Mr. Cremo didn't react when the names of the seven victims he allegedly gunned down were read. Now, Cremo climbed onto the roof of a business in the wealthy Chicago suburb on Monday, July 4th, and fired more than 80 rounds from his Smith & Wesson M&P-15 semi-automatic rifle, stopping twice to reload, according to prosecutors. Now, Cremo, who allegedly planned the attack for weeks, wore women's clothing so he could blend in with fleeing from the crowd and make his escape. Lake County Assistant State's Attorney Ben Dillon made these representations to the court. Now, Mr. Cremo relayed to investigators that he dressed up like a girl and covered his tattoos with makeup because people recognize him. You think? Look at this guy's face. The defendant acknowledged that he used the stairway to get to the rooftop, then relayed to investigators that he looked down, aimed and opened fire at the people across the street. The defendant told investigators that he fired the full 30-round magazine, dropped it, and popped in another 30-round magazine, firing it until putting it in a third magazine and continued to fire. Investigators later recovered the three 30-round rifle magazines and 83 spent shell casings on the roof of the building. It is alleged that as Cremo fled the scene, his rifle fell out of his bag in an alley. Authorities used the serial number on the rifle to identify Cremo as a suspect and put out an alert for him. Cremo remained on the loose for hours after borrowing his mother's car, but was eventually nabbed about 5 miles from the actual shooting scene. Now, this all took place less than 3 years after the police were called to Cremo's home back in 2019, following reports where he threatened to kill everyone. Police ended up confiscating 16 knives, a dagger, and a sword in that incident, but said that there was no sign he had any guns at the time. Authorities also visited his home in April of 2019 after receiving a report Cremo had attempted suicide. Now, despite his two troubling encounters with law enforcement, Cremo was then still able to legally buy firearms, including the AR-style rifle he allegedly used in the Independence Day attack. Now, if convicted on the charges, Cremo could face a mandatory life prison sentence without the possibility of parole. Let's face it, there's not much here for his attorneys to do so, assuming there's no issues related to the statement given by Cremo to the investigators. His goose is pretty much cooked. This case is not a whodunit, and since the rifle registered back to him, and basically the police have solved it, what's there to do other than get him a life sentence? He'll basically get the same sentence, whether he committed one homicide or, in this case, seven. Now, some would argue that when you get rid of the ultimate sentence, you only get a volume discount for the defendants for committing more crime. Let me know what you think. At a certain point, you can only put somebody away for so many years until they die in prison. Then what? Now, I'm sure we don't know everything about this kid's issues, but it seems like there's some mental health issues here. It seems to be a common trend in a lot of these incidents that take place. And here's my issue. If you don't want to be here amongst the living, you want to die, go do it. Just don't hurt anyone else in the process. Because you know what? When you do that, you are just a coward. And that's what this little punk is a coward. All right, let's talk body farms. Now, I'm sure, as a true crime aficionado, you're aware of the body farm down at the University of Tennessee, where they basically bury cadavers in various states of decomposition in various environments to see how quickly the bodies can decompose. And it helps judge how long a body has been in a particular location. And they use that to help determine how long somebody has been deceased based upon the level of decomposition. Now, there are some other locations not associated with the University of Tennessee that does the same work, but obviously it's done to see how long a body has been in a particular location to determine the cause of death. Well, here's a story about another kind of body farm, if you would. It's here in Colorado, over on the Western Slope. A funeral home director has admitted selling corpses to medical researchers, then lying to the families that the remains had been cremated. This woman, Megan Hess, entered the plea to the fraud charge at a hearing before a United States magistrate judge in Grand Junction, Colorado yesterday. And despite her admission, Hess initially remained arrogant in court, branding the case against her as a travesty. Moments later, though, she admitted the allegations were in fact true. Now, the FBI agents found that Hess forged dozens of body donor consent forms at her Sunset Mesa funeral home, with the fraudster allegedly giving one family an urn of concrete dust instead of the loved one's ashes. Now, in court documents, a former employee also said Hess earned $40,000 by extracting and selling the gold teeth of some of the deceased. She is said to have sold the remains to medical research firms and colleges, which use the bodies to train medical and dental students. Now, Hess charged $1,000 per cremation, only to pass on body parts to buyers, and also offered poor families free undertaking services, only to steal the remains. Hess, whose mom, Shirley Koch, is also accused of being a body harvester, was previously accused of spending that money on a trip to Walt Disney World. Now, the judge scheduled Hess, who has previously pled not guilty, to be sentenced in January, with the prosecution's going to recommend a sentence of 12 to 15 years. Hess admitted that through her funeral home, located in the town of Montrose, Colorado, in the western part of the state, that she defrauded at least a dozen families seeking cremation services for deceased relatives. Instead of cremating the bodies, the court records show her body broker company harvested heads, spines, arms, and legs, and then sold them mostly for surgical training and other educational purposes. Now, Hess had been scheduled to go to trial in 3 weeks, along with her mother, Shirley Koch, who also previously pled not guilty. Now, Koch's change of plea hearing is set for July 12th. Now, during the hearing, the judge asked Hess to describe in her own words the crimes that she committed. Judges do that to make sure people are actually pleading guilty to the crime they committed. And if they don't want to admit that, then they can go to trial. So Hess, as I stated earlier, called the whole affair a legal travesty. But when prodded by the judge and understanding that the court was not going to accept her guilty plea if she proclaimed her innocence, ultimately admitted that she defrauded her victims, though she declined to go into detail. Now, according to government filings, Hess targeted poor and vulnerable families as they grappled with a relative's final days to increase sales. She would offer them free cremations but give out urns which were full of other dusty materials. Meeting with hospice on the 4th, opening the floodgates of donors. That's right. That's what Hess wrote to a prospective body part buyer in 2014. They have 4 or 5 deaths a day. Get ready. How about a deal on full embalmed spines for $950? Selling organs such as hearts, kidneys, and tendons for transplants, well, guess what? It's illegal in the United States. but the sale of cadavers and body parts for research and education, which Hess did, is not regulated by any federal law. Needless to say, we'll wait and see if her mother makes it through her Rule 11 advisement where she pleads guilty, or whether this will ultimately wind up in court. Now, the judge that she appeared in front of is a magistrate judge, and it's not uncommon for cases on the Western Slope in federal court to have the plea taken by the magistrate judge. And then the district court judge has to do the sentencing in the case. But the court can also reject it if somebody is equivocating on whether they want to plead guilty or not. Because in federal court, they're adamant. They don't want people to plead guilty if they don't believe they're actually guilty. Can you imagine such a thing? Whereas in state court, it's get them in, get them out, plead them guilty. All right, next on the docket. Would you want this young lady to watch your child? I don't think so. She has issues. A Nebraska woman was arrested late last month for allegedly abusing a toddler at a daycare facility and posting the video on social media. Courtney Strickley, she's 19, reportedly posted a video of herself sweeping a 20-month-old boy's legs from under him, leading him to hit his head and ultimately cry. The incident occurred on April 25th, but Perkins County Police did not start an investigation until June 13th after the victim's mother reported the incident to the police. The mother reportedly reviewed the video, which Stickley allegedly posted on her Snapchat. Two former employees of the daycare confirmed Stickley as the person filming the toddler and said the abuse occurred in the toddler's room based on the objects seen in the background of the video. On June 24th, a police sergeant tried to schedule an interview with Ms. Stickley, but she allegedly claimed that she was too busy and could not speak with them at least until the next 2 or 3 weeks. Well, on June 25th, Stickley was pulled over and arrested for reckless driving. Later that day, she was taken into custody in connection with the child abuse accusation. And Stickley is currently free on $7,500 on posted bond. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, you have to check these people out. Friends, family, people that you are going to be introducing into your life. If you want to check them out, go to crimetalksearch.com where you'll get a comprehensive background search done literally while you wait. I'm telling you, we use this in my law firm all the time. It is a good starting point for investigations. You never know what you're going to find. And I'm telling you, normally there's something interesting that comes up, because it's not like people are going to tell you, oh, by the way, I've been arrested for doing bad things to small children that are in my care at daycare. You got to check them out. Maybe check their parents out. Who else is going to be around the kids? You can't be too careful in today's world. And in today's world, with the amount of information we have, it's almost parental neglect if you're not checking out who's watching your children. Okay, next on the docket. I remember this case when I was in high school, okay? And when this case happened back in 1984, I'm telling you, it freaked the city out because they thought that the person was coming in through garage doors that people left open to the house. So I remember it to this day. Then it went cold, and then there was this breaking news years ago that they finally caught the guy because of DNA evidence. So let me tell you a little bit more about it. So back in the early morning hours of January 16th of 1984, members of the Bennett family, Aurora, Colorado, Bruce, his wife Deborah, and their daughter Melissa were among those killed when the Hammer killer, later identified as Alex Ewing, beat them all to death. Now, Bruce confronted the wide-eyed man at the top of the stairs, and they engaged in a fight, ultimately rolling down the staircase, even breaking the banister. Now, Bruce was no match for Ewing, who bashed the young father's head in with a hammer before slashing his throat with a butcher's knife from the kitchen. Ascending the bloody stairs, Ewing sexually assaulted Deborah and the girls and beat them with a hammer. Only one of the close-knit family members survived, the couple's youngest daughter, Vanessa, who was 3 years old at the time. Now, Ewing attacked her with a hammer, shattering her jaw, skull, arms, and legs. That morning, Vanessa was wedged between her bed and the wall, covered in blood, unconscious from the hammer hits, but somehow she was able to cling to life. She and her family were the victims of one of the most vicious serial killers ever. This guy, Mr. Ewing, committed 4 attacks in the Metro Denver area, 3 in Aurora when he attacked Jim and Kim Habershild and Donna Holm, who survived, as well as the Bennetts and one in nearby Lakewood, Colorado, where he killed interior designer Patricia Smith, and this all took place over 12 days. But Ewing's violent spree continued 11 more days after in Arizona, when he attacked Roy Williams with a rock as he lay sleeping in his Kingman home. It finally ended on August 9th of 1984 in Nevada, where he was arrested for attempted murder for attacking Nancy and Chris Berry in Henderson with an axe handle. Nice guy, right? Well, when DNA evidence surfaced tying Ewing, already in prison serving a 40-year sentence in Nevada for attacking the Henderson couple, to the Bennetts and to the Smith murders, it appeared that, oh, guess what? He's a serial killer. Now, Ewing was convicted in 2021 for the Bennetts murder and in 2022 for killing Smith. Now, Ewing, who's actually now 61 years old, is serving 4 consecutive life sentences. This man needs to rot in prison. We know that's where he's going to be, but at least the family got some justice. Now, the survivor in this particular case, there's going to be a documentary put out about it shortly. And she's had some serious trauma, as you can imagine, throughout her life, but it sounds like she is doing much better. It definitely sounds like a show worth watching when it comes on TV. You can only imagine what it'd be like to lose both your parents and your sister and be basically an orphan at age 3 and to live with that trauma all your life. Tough, tough case. Next on the docket, our dumb criminal of the day. Please meet our dumb criminal, Jason Stoll. Well, he was selling hot dogs on a downtown St. Petersburg street early Saturday when the police gave him numerous warnings that he was in violation of city ordinance. Stoll, however, ignored the warnings and continued to sell the hot dogs in the roadway after the street closure permit ended. This is all according to police affidavits, remember. Now, the defendant was asked to put the hot dog down as he continued his attempt to sell it. Officer Anthony Bragano directed him to stop the hot dog selling. Stoll reportedly became extremely upset and threw the hot dog, which is not a sandwich, at a different police officer, a Sergeant Michael Carianis. The hot dog hit the police officer, who was not injured by the flying hot dog. Now, Stoll was arrested for battery on a law enforcement officer, which is a felony. And he was also charged with resisting, a misdemeanor, for allegedly struggling with the cops as they sought to place him under arrest. Mr. Stoll was released from the county jail after posting a $2,650 bond, which begs a couple of questions. Yes, why, Scott? Why are there so many cases where people are assaulting, let alone police officers, people with food? Well, I think it's just because it's handy at the time. But it also makes you wonder, really, police officers? There's apparently no crime in the jurisdiction in which you do anything, and we have to harass a man selling hot dogs to people that want to buy hot dogs, but you're saying he doesn't have a license for the hot dogs. I get it, right? The city has a duty to protect everybody, and if, by God, you don't get your license, who knows? Unsafe hot dog sellers could be out there providing, I don't know, whatever's put into a hot dog. Exactly. If people are willing to voluntarily put it in their body, let them eat the damn hot dog from the vendor that's willing to sell to them. Little buyers beware, right? But no, the police had to go and harass the hot dog seller, a guy who's trying to make a buck by selling his hot dogs to people that want to buy his hot dogs. And the police had to interfere. Was anybody complaining that the hot dogs were not good? That they were not hot dogs? You know, no, nothing. But the police officers had to make the point that they were right and that you had to have your license. I don't know who's more dumb in this particular situation, the police officers or the man, Mr. Stoll, throwing the hot dogs. Let me know in the comments if you agree or, hey, Scott, you're all wrong. Anyway, thanks for watching. Please join us tonight, 6 p.m. Mountain Time, for our special live edition, because we didn't do it yesterday because I was traveling. Have a wonderful day. We'll see you tonight.